I say we roll through the reviews that aren't Mass Effect.
Okay.
And then we do the big Mass Effect talk that leads into the topic that relates to Mass Effect.
All right. This is a very professional podcast.
This is a super professional
podcast. I like how we just hashed that out right here.
In 5, 4, 3, action.
If you don't say 2-1 and then you say action, it totally eliminates the reason.
It's in 5, 4, 3.
All right. Welcome to the podcast Rated an A, episode number 53 for the website nerdappropriate.com. How you guys doing?
Awesome.
We're all in the same room again. We took a week off.
We did.
It's weird that we took a week off, and the last time we recorded, you were here, and now you're here again.
I know.
I've been flying a lot.
And we're recording again.
Well, it was my sweet mother's 60th birthday.
Are you getting a lot of frequent flyers?
I'm getting a decent amount, but not
bonuses.
I need to start signing up for these frequent flyer
programs. JetBlue has like a reward program
really?
Where you just get, you don't have to have their card or anything, you just get points.
Yeah.
You rack them up, but I've only actually used it once for one free flight.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's not like the greatest thing.
Just a thing.
Yeah.
It's not like worth paying more for JetBlue over like a cheaper flight from Delta.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Just go get the cheapest flight. It's not that great. But yeah, I get some. I have been traveling a lot. The joke I made was if I'm doing nothing but buying budget flights from New York to Orlando, am I still considered a jet setter? But I don't think I am.
What is a jet setter?
It's somebody who like... You know, travels around the world. And
like Pan Am?
You're always like going around doing stuff.
Fancy pants. Like, you know, like.
You're drinking like vodka martinis on the plane.
Exactly. Like, I'm not.
Slapping the bums of stewardesses. Flight attendants, rather, in my
apologies. Oh, boy.
That's what jet setters do, I guess. So how are you gentlemen been?
Well, I think we've all finished Mass Effect.
Yep. We did.
So there's going to be a lot of that today.
Yes.
It's going to be our big focus today.
In the downtime, in the catharsis period, I finished a second playthrough of Bastion.
Nice.
To get those other achievements.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Still awesome. Still a great game.
Yeah, that game's awesome.
And I started playing Saints Row.
Nice.
Which is totally awesome.
Did you get to the skydiving scene yet?
No, but I've been, like, base jumping off of buildings just for the hell of it right now.
Isn't the animation that great when you jump?
Yeah.
It's really cool how they do it.
Yeah, it's
fun.
It's awesome that the game isn't broken in the sense that you jump off the building like you're flailing. It goes into the animation, like a base jumping animation.
Yeah, it's really well done. I obviously finished Mass Effect. I picked up Resident Evil Operation Raccoon City, which we'll talk about. And I actually started a second Mass Effect playthrough.
Already?
I did.
Is this off of one of your other characters?
Yeah, but I had a week off, so I had a, you know.
I didn't start Mass Effect until you guys had finished, and then I powered through it in like 4.5 days of play.
Finished very promptly, I would say.
So, that was all I did, and then I have relaxed for 4 days on a beach, essentially.
I hear that.
Which was nice.
Nice. That's always fun.
Can't complain.
It was. It was good times. Well, let's kick it off. The news we have is about a new project from our good friend of site, Bree Grant.
Yep.
But actually, I think we can say
she is
kind
of
a friend of the
site.
Like, you know,
this
Ash has befriended her.
Yeah.
Yes, over the many years. No, she was, we interviewed her for the site a long time ago, and then we, kind of crossed paths a few times and have kept in touch. But she's actually in the process of directing a feature film, which has a really great plot. The film's called Best Friends Forever. Best Friends Forever. Stated without a speech impediment. Best Friends Forever, and it's actually a post-apocalyptic road trip film. So it takes place after the end of the world, and it's about two friends traveling across the country after the apocalypse and kind of the hijinks that ensue. But she's the co-writer of the film. She's the director of the film. They're directing it actually on 16mm, kind of old-school style, on actual film, not digital, which is going to be really cool. And they have a Kickstarter set up for it, so if you actually go to Kickstarter.com and look for Best Friends Forever, you'll be able to see their pitch for the Kickstarter. You'll be able to see some footage from the film that they've already shot. Basically, it is a great, great project that you guys should back for a lot of reasons, and I'm not just here to pitch it. First of all, I think there should be more female directors. There's not enough female directors. I'm all in support of female writers, female directors, because I don't think there are really enough of them in the scene right now. And also, everybody loves a good apocalypse. So yeah. I love movies that are kind of have this... It's kind of a different take on what happens after the end of the world, you know? Like, it's kind of unique. So that's why I think you guys should keep an eye out for it. So keep an eye out for Best Friends Forever. Check out their Kickstarter.
And they have
a Facebook page set up.
The website is bestfriendsforeverfilm.com.
Awesome. Yeah, and I think what's awesome about Kickstarter and what works really well for these like indie films and stuff is that as it gets funded, especially if they go past their goal, it's really cool to see them update and offer more rewards and like, oh, now we're going to give out, you know, free t-shirts to people who did $50 or whatever. It's just such an organic, like, cool thing to watch happen for good people. So
yeah, the rewards are actually pretty cool right now. Yeah. I mean, like, if you pledge, like, let's say $25, you get, you know, access to early trailers and teasers, and the higher you get, you can go to the early screening of the movie mm-hmm. with the whole crew there and, you know, hang out with them.
Like $50, you get a signed DVD and yeah. all the other stuff with it. So.
Yeah. So it's a really cool project. Again, we're big fans of independent film here as well. I know we talk about video games a whole lot on the podcast, but we like movies as well. And when we see people that we support having awesome projects, we like to support them as well. So
yeah, definitely.
Cool.
What should we go to next?
Man, we have so much.
Well, I mean, let's plan the podcast on the podcast.
Let's do the rundown.
Yeah, let's do it in real time. Real time planning. We did, okay, for the audience that's listening, we actually do have people that listen. It's kind of weird. We don't have a lot of news today because we figured that we'll probably talk about Mass Effect almost the whole time because this is the first time we've all been in a room together since we've all beaten the game. So we do have a bunch of reviews, and we do have a lot of Mass Effect talk.
I say we roll through the reviews that aren't Mass Effect,
okay,
and then we do the big Mass Effect talk that leads into the topic that relates to Mass Effect.
All right. This is a very professional podcast.
This is a super professional
podcast. I like how we just hashed that out right here.
So, Ash, I looked at Resident Evil Operation Raccoon City today and did not buy it.
Oh, well, I'm glad you didn't buy it.
Was that a smart decision?
I'm glad you didn't buy it. No, okay, so a little bit of background before I review my... Because I was going to write a written review for this game, but at this point it's almost like, why should I even bother? I'm like, I don't want to tell people to buy it. I don't want to tell people to not buy it. I'm a huge Resident Evil fan. It's still probably one of my top five franchises of all time.
So this was a no-brainer for you,
yeah,
buying this.
It's funny. I had the box in my hand, and I had it pre-ordered and everything, and I had it, and I was like, my wife was with me, and I was like, well, what should I do? She's like, well, you have to buy it. Are you kidding?
Right.
I'm like, yeah. She's like, this is a Resident Evil game. I was like, yeah, you're right. I have to buy it. And this is after all the reviews have come out, and I try really hard not to read reviews, but reviews for this game have been, like, scathing, like, mm-hmm. absolutely terrible. So I took it home, and I plugged it in. I played through the whole campaign, beat the game already in probably about 5.5-6 hours, which is really
short
for a $60 title. The title,
even Splinter Cell Conviction was longer than that. That was a short game.
Yeah. So it's 5.5-6 hours is how long it took me to beat it on the veteran setting, which is the second to the most difficult. In terms of gameplay, the game has some like definite flaws. The premise is pretty awesome. Actually, you play, during the events of Resident Evil 2 and Resident Evil 3, which took place simultaneously, so Raccoon City is kind of in flames, zombies are everywhere, liquors are in the streets, Nemesis is walking around. It's like pretty much the best time you could ever make a Resident Evil game. It's when all the shit was hitting the fan, and it was just like the heart of the zombie apocalypse. You play as, there are 6 different Umbrella Special Forces agents that you play as, and you can choose between any one of the 6 to play as, and they have upgradable skill trees and things like that, and different abilities, and it's 4-player co-op from the beginning, drop in, drop out. Sounds awesome.
Borderlands-y?
Yeah, not as much depth. I mean, each person only has 5 skills that are up, have 3 ranks each, so you can kind of tweak your guy out a little bit, but...
But
a
la, that kind of style.
Yeah, so it's a third-person cover-based shooter. Cover system doesn't work all that well.
Oh.
The guns don't work all that well. There's a melee combat system doesn't work all that well.
Oh, no.
But to be honest, like, I actually enjoyed my playthrough, and part of it was probably just because it's a nostalgia piece. I got mm-hmm. to revisit areas that I had played when I was a kid. Like,
yeah.
You get to go back into the Raccoon City Police Department. You get to go back into...
Because 2 was what, 99? 2000?
Yeah, right around there.
So is the story supposed to be like what the Umbrella Corporation has been doing like during these events?
And the story runs parallel to the events of the other games. So you'll actually see the beginning of Resident Evil 2 opens with Leon, Kennedy, and Claire getting in a car accident. And there's this big explosion, right. And they get separated. Well, you get to see that from the angle of the Umbrella agents.
Oh, cool.
And you actually start chasing Leon, and it kind of, like, manipulates the story a little bit, but you actually get to see the world from another angle, which was cool.
Yeah.
I think the main problem, there's been a lot of, like, reviews that are talking about the, it's really dark, and, yeah, the game is dark. It takes place completely at night during a zombie apocalypse. It's meant to be dark. That didn't bother me at all. There wasn't a time where I didn't know what was going on. So the darkness thing is just people being annoying. There are definite issues with the weaponry, the way the guns feel. I talk about that a lot. But at this point, you guys know, like, when you pick up a game and you fire a weapon in a game, you're like, oh, this... I mean, if it feels like a fucking cap gun in your hands, and the bullets spray all over the place and don't hit your target when you're aiming at something, then something's wrong.
And
it's that way with almost all the weapons. I did get to play online with Derek. We played co-op through part of the campaign, and that increased my enjoyment a whole lot. It was actually mm-hmm. a
lot of fun. Did you play through the entire campaign again with him?
Not the entire, about a third of it we did together in just a single sitting, a couple hours.
Yeah.
And I could see... Like, as if you wanted to pick this up in, like, a couple months when it's inevitably going to be $30, mm-hmm. and you and three of your buddies would sit down and play it, start to finish, definitely worth your $20 or $30 as a four-player co-op title, because it has a lot of cool moments, you know, and different players can do really cool things. There's a guy that can cloak and, like, break zombie necks, and another guy can, like, shove grenades in a guy's mouth and throw them into enemies.
So, wait, when you play by yourself, are there bots that play with you?
Yes. Thanks for bringing that up. There's enemy AI, obviously enemy AI, but also the enemy does have AI, even though they're zombies. No, your players are played by bots instead of humans when you don't have humans playing with you, and they are pretty dumb. They're dying pretty much constantly, you know, running just haphazardly into zombie hordes and, like, hacking wildly with machetes and stuff. And so you spend a lot of time picking them up. They will do things like heal you. They won't resurrect you if you get knocked down. So the AI is kind of a bit of a mess.
They won't resurrect you?
Lose? When you die? When you bleed out?
When you bleed out in without another human... on your side, the game resets and you go back to your checkpoint. So, So okay. The AI is probably the biggest problem, and then perhaps the weaponry. So definitely it's a game you'll want to play with other people. I enjoyed the music. I enjoyed the sound. I thought all of that was great.
True to Resident Evil.
Yeah, I didn't feel like the graphics were as bad as some other sites are really complaining about. It feels very dated. It feels, if this title came out, like, before, say, Gears of War 1, I think people would have loved the heck out of it.
You just jumped a lot of time.
That was a while ago. If this came out back then and was a cover-based shooter, I think people would have eaten alive and it would have been a great title. But we've come a long way since then.
Yeah.
And games have become a lot more sophisticated. And, you know, things like mantling over cover and SWAT turns and all of those things that we've become very used to in a cover-based shooter, those are absent from this title. Which makes it feel very, very dated. So, yeah.
Wow.
So, pick it up when it's on sale and you have some friends to play with. I also played it online. There's a huge variety of online modes you can play in this game. Unfortunately, I had latency issues and issues with the netcode that wasn't just me having issues with the netcode. It was other players as well. So you can't play an online shooter and have lag time with bullets. It just doesn't work. Yeah, so if you shoot someone with a shotgun and you can, like, go grab a soda by the time the shotgun bullets hit, there's something wrong. That's really exaggerating. There's, like, a millisecond lag time with bullets. Enough to be noticeable. I was just being kind of an asshole. So a lot of sites, like, the Metascore on this is, like, a 50 or something absurd like that. Definitely not. This is a B-minus C game if I had to give it a rating, which
Why do you think people were so mad? Because of the length of the game? Because Homefront was, like, 5 hours.
I think it's because the pedigree of the Resident Evil franchise, people hold it in very high regard. So they're not going to hold it to the same standards as a new IP.
Do you think this was a backlash against, like you said, because it's not the same as all the other Resident Evil games? Do you think that's why?
I think that's part of it. I think people are very apprehensive about, the westernization of a Japanese title, especially a classic Japanese title. Slant 6, I think, is based out of, I want to say, Canada.
Yeah.
And they developed this game, so I don't know if people are angry about that, or people on the internet just like to be angry, which
did
I think...
rushed or anything? I mean, is there...
People do like to be angry on the internet.
Well, it definitely... I don't know if it was supposed to come out in November, so it's already had a little bit of extra time. And I know it has to come out before this November, because that's when Resident Evil 6 launches. So they had to, I think, marketing had to figure out a good time to release this.
Yeah.
It just seemed like it needed another, 6 months of polish and maybe some extra levels, and I think it would have done a little bit better.
I have one last interesting question for you. Yeah. Do you think there's been too many Resident Evil releases lately? Because there was, 2 3DS games, and now 2 Xbox games are coming out this year.
Yeah.
And I guess if you were playing all of them, that seems like a lot of stuff.
I think...
Or why the surge?
Well, it's a popular franchise. It's always a moneymaker for Capcom. It's one of their biggest, go-to franchises for some cash. I really think that they should just basically give that franchise to their A players, and they shouldn't make any more spin-off titles.
Yeah.
Because we always see this. Whenever there are spin-off titles, you sort of lose a little bit of the integrity of the franchise. And I'm hoping that Resident Evil 6 is a nice reboot. It's not a reboot, but I hope it's a nice, back to the old Resident Evil, scary, dark, monsters and guns and all that fun stuff that we like, so.
I did have a revision for the last podcast that just reminded me when I said that to you about Resident Evil. I Am Alive did get funding pulled from it, and that was part of why it went the direction it went, and part of the complaints that everybody's having about it, which I don't agree with.
Oh, okay.
That it had funding pulled, and it kind of became a quarter of the game that it was going to be original.
Oh, that's a bummer, because I listened to our own podcast, and I was like, oh, that was a good question. I was like, I wonder if I Am Alive did lose funding.
Yeah, it did, because I just was unaware of it. I didn't know the history of the game, that's but nice. I guess it was slated as a full release, and then got funding pulled, and then they kind of reformed the team and moved it to something else, and then it came out as this kind of mishmash.
But isn't that what happened with Bastion as well, or was that always?
Bastion was another game that had funding pulled.
Really?
Yeah. It was
and is this the full is this the first time that?
But Bastion was going to be a whole other game. It was like full 3D. They had plans for that game to be a much bigger game than it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they yanked funding on it, they were like, "Well, what can we still do to make it come out?" And they went that route and ended up making it, I think, a much better game.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That it seemed like it could have been.
I think this was the first time we've ever corrected something from a previous podcast.
Yeah, well, I thought about it, and I was like, oh, I don't want to, be on record forever saying something completely incorrect, so...
Very professional.
Oh, yeah, super professional. We are very professional.
That's why we don't have pants on right now.
Yep.
You guys either?
Nope.
Yeah, good.
I keep the air running in here just to keep everything aired out properly.
Yeah.
Do you guys want to talk about R Complex?
Sure. Yeah.
All right, cool, so...
I'd rather talk about R Compelx.
Is that what I wrote? Oh, Compelx. See, I didn't even double check the spell check because
our show notes what works really good on the podcast? Jokes about show notes that no one else can read.
Yeah. Sorry, guys.
So R Complex, I think, was previously an indie game available for PC or probably for PC, and it is now available on iOS, and it's actually really cool. The gameplay mechanic is really simple. I feel like there are a lot of games on touch devices like this, and it's one where it's like you have to dodge obstacles. So something comes at you, you need to jump, or something else comes at you, you need to slide underneath it. But this game puts it into a style and kind of an art vibe that is, I feel like, more reminiscent of in the review I wrote, I said it was Killer 7.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. With the sort of solid color art style and sort of the tone of the game. The game is told two ways. The narrative of the game is told through the monologue of the character as you're playing through the level. So as you progress through the level, you uncover more of the story. And then during the cutscenes in between levels, there's comic book style help you fill in the details. And it's, I don't know, it's just really interesting. It's one of these things where it's, like, made by two people.
Yeah.
Like, they wrote all the music, did all the art, like, wrote the story. It's cool the whole time. You're basically running the whole time, and you're trying to run away from, like, this darkness in the form of these, like, black tentacles that are chasing after you.
That's cool.
So, the more you screw up, the closer
you... Are you saying black tentacles are cool, Matt? Just ask it.
Yeah.
Sure.
All right, moving on.
So the more you screw up, the closer the tentacles get. You can shoot the tentacles, but you only have a limited number of bullets.
All right.
If the tentacles grab you, you have a scythe attached to your shotgun, and you can saw off one of the tentacles and keep running.
Okay.
So it's basically like you get one chance
to get... Is it constant run game?
Yeah, like constant run.
Yeah.
So you get one chance to get caught. You have bullets to like shoot the darkness back if you can watch it fast enough. But it's really, like, it's difficult. It's really hard because you're watching the front of the screen for the obstacles. You're watching the back of the screen for the tentacles. And then you're watching, like, the position of your character so you jump and slide at the right time.
Awesome.
And the thing that's interesting is that in the article I wrote, like, this game is fucking hard, but that's awesome. Like, yeah. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
And I haven't played it since today, but this game got an update today as we speak, and... Actually, I think they made the game a little easier because...
Because of your article?
I don't know. I guess what happened was is that the jump animation was slow.
Okay.
And the time that you had to react to something that you needed to jump over was probably like a millisecond.
Okay.
Like, as soon as the item appeared at the edge of your screen, you had to start jumping.
Yeah. Okay.
So that what they did was they ended up pulling the camera back a little bit and then making the jump animation faster.
Okay.
But the game is cool because like as you're running, the camera does zoom in and out. So it kind of, like, messes up.
The art style is beautiful. I loved it. I thought it looked great.
The original release was on PC in 09.
Okay.
And there's planned releases for Android, iOS, and then Mac and PC again.
Yeah.
On the Unity platform.
Very cool.
It's really cool, and I feel like this is the type of game where if this takes off, they get the funding, or, you know, continues to be popular, they can make more of it.
Yeah.
And if this is the kind of stuff that these guys are designing, like...
You're good with it.
Even better. So I wrote, you know, like I said, there's an article on the site if you want to know more about the game. Unfortunately, by the time you listen to this, the sale that was going on will have passed, but the game is only $2 on iOS, and I think it's worth it. It's,
awesome.
Cool. It's definitely one of those games where if you have 5 minutes, you can play. It's like easy to learn, difficult to master, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so, awesome. Yeah. Definitely check it out. R-Complex.
R-Complex.
Very cool.
Excellent.
So you guys saw The Hunger Games and read it.
Yes. Let me ask Scott this.
Okay.
Why did you read The Hunger Games?
Because my wife said to me, hey, have you heard of this book called The Hunger Games? I said, no. She said, well, everybody at my work is reading it, and there's a movie coming out in a month. So I want to read the book and then see the movie. And I was like, okay.
Very, very similar to mine.
Yeah.
A coworker of mine, Jackie, who I think you guys have met, she teaches English at the high school that I work at.
Mm-hmm.
And she gave me this book 6 months ago and said, you have to read it. It's awesome. And they're actually reading it in high school now.
Wow.
As a high school book, which is awesome because the kids actually like it and they read it in my class when they shouldn't be. So I didn't read it then at her request, but then my wife, pretty much the exact same thing.
Yeah.
She's like, I just read all three of these in a week. Well, she did. She read all three in a week. She's like, you have to read it. And I'm like, well, if you beat Mass Effect 1, I will read Hunger Games 1. And if you beat Mass Effect 2, I will read Hunger Games 2.
Awesome.
And so that is where we are. So I finished Hunger Games. She beat Mass Effect 1. And I actually enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy, like, the first half of the book.
Sure.
It was, like, to me, the first half of the book was, like, the whole first-person thing was really jarring for me.
Yeah, it's
like,
a little weird.
And I didn't really... Until the game started, I wasn't, like, enthralled. I was just kind of like, all right.
Did we talk about this last week? That, like, when I, like, you can kind of read the book in, like, a film noir style? Because she talks about her, like, the things that she does, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's like, that guy's name is Billy. He always comes down to the shop and brings me squirrels, so you know.
Is that the voice you used when you were reading it?
No. I mean, like, sometimes.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Excellent. Excellent.
So my question is, like, I get really annoyed with this because everybody, you know, the hip nerds are always like, this is just Battle Royale, like, American version. And I kind of want to be like, Yeah, because this is the first property to ever borrow anything from anyone foreign at all. You know, like...
Well, couldn't you also say,
like... Does it
annoy
you? Does it bother you that there is an existing property? Did you feel like, this is Running Man, I'm just reading Running Man?
That's what I was going to say. If you want to talk about, like, everything old is new again, you could be like, oh, this is like Logan's Run.
I guess what I'm saying is
like
that obvious? Does it really seem like a ripoff? Or does it feel like it has its own... It has to have its own...
It feels
lens,
like
right?
Reading it feels familiar. But okay. That is not a reason to not read it.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
So, let's get into the movie then.
Okay.
You guys saw it this weekend. It's opening weekend. Let's go Ash.
All right.
Who has not been to a movie in quite a while.
Yeah, it's
self-professed.
True. It's true. It's kind of sad. I used to go all the time, but not so much anymore. I actually really enjoyed it. And it's funny because I finished the book the day before I went to the movie, so everything was still very fresh.
Yeah, okay.
So I was catching a lot of the little inconsistencies that I probably wouldn't catch if there was a lot of time in between the reading and the viewing of the film. But I thought the casting was great. I thought that Jennifer Lawrence, who played Katniss, I thought she did a great job. I wasn't a huge fan of hers from X-Men First Class. I didn't really feel like she had, like, a time to shine in that film.
Yeah.
But I thought she did a great job. The character Katniss is really conflicted, and really a lot of her emotion is really internalized. And, like, basically the whole book is, like, her inner monologue, what she's thinking. Like, do I love him or do I love him? Do I go here or do I go there? And, like, so she actually acted out that internal conflict very, very well.
I think so, yeah.
I think a lot of the gore from the book was toned down, which I missed. There was a nice arrow to the throat shot that I was, like, really waiting for.
Knew that they had to make the movie PG-13 for the audience, because if the book was interpreted literally on film, it would probably be an R movie for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was no way that was going to happen, because this book is in, like, the young adult section, like, of the bookstore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I did think it was weird, though, like... She did do a good job acting the character, but it was weird to try to translate a book that was all, like, that's all inner monologue into a film, which is more or less, like, not narrated by her, but sort of the film is kind of told through like, the television programming almost.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Through,
yeah,
like, the interviews and the announcers and stuff, kind of, like, fill in the details of the story for you, like, in the cutaways, which is something that was weird, because you're always with her in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book she wonders about, like, what people in the Capitol are doing, but you never actually see them.
Mm-hmm.
So the book has the vibe of her, like, being alone the whole time. Whereas, like, the movie is kind of, like, told in this, like, global
of you actually get to see people's reactions to the game. And, like, the 30-second rundown of what the world is like, there is a giant, I guess, a nuclear apocalypse of some sort. The world population's cut down to, or the United States population's cut down to about 100,000 people. Over, like, in California becomes known as the capital, and there's a giant civil war between all the other people in the United States after this nuclear apocalypse. They're all split into different districts that are all numbered, and because of that civil war, the capital wins the civil war. All the rest of the districts, and there's 12 other districts, they're all punished for their involvement in this civil war. And as their punishment, they have to sacrifice a boy and a girl every year to be basically murdered on screen every single year for the enjoyment of everyone. And only one kid can walk out. And there's a food shortage throughout the United States. And that is why it's called the Hunger Games, because basically everybody in the United States, except for people in the Capitol, they're all going hungry pretty much all the time. If you win the Hunger Games, you and your family win food.
Yeah.
And this is a trilogy, right?
Yeah.
Okay. They do a good job in the film of showing, like the dystopian part of the movie.
Yeah.
In the sense that, like even, like, the look and feel of the districts, the way that they shoot the districts and the color palettes in the districts are, like, totally different from when you see the Capitol. The Capitol more or less looks like...
Candy-colored, like...
Well, the Capitol is sort of like a blend between, like, Mass Effect Future Earth and, like, Naboo.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And everybody wears, like... candy cane colored clothing and, like,
right,
Candyland is what I meant to say.
Candy cane,
yeah,
it's very like Tim Burton. If Tim Burton built a future city, that's kind of what the Capitol looks like.
Yeah, everybody's just like over the top, like Alice in Wonderland style,
kind of Victorian strange.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it was good. I really enjoyed it. Like, you know, this is a very popular series for young adults, but there's a lot of really cool things, and the movie was directed very well, and I didn't have any problems with, like, shots or sound or any of that.
The guy who did Pleasantville.
Oh, well, that explains it.
I think that...
Gary Ross. He also did Seabiscuit, I believe.
I think that the way this movie spans, like, demographics is, like, it's written... Like, the books are, like, young adult, like we said.
Right.
So there's, like, this love kind of conflict. So, like, younger... You know, if you're, like, a Twilight person, like, that's what you grab onto there. And then there's, like, this whole, like, dystopian, like this, like, grotesque, like, games that these people participate in and murder each other. So it's kind of got, like, that... Sort of like, I would say more of a mass appeal for like anyone that's a fan of
science fiction.
Logan's Run,
yeah.
The Lottery, Running Man, like all that stuff is kind of like wrapped up into this.
Well done.
Cool. I bought the book for my wife, a year ago Christmas. I bought the first one for her, and she had to read it. So it's still sitting in her pile of books to read, but
it's a quick read.
I wanted her to read it, and then I was going to read it because I knew they were going to do a movie, and then that never happened.
So. The thing that's interesting is that, like, for the most part, like, the story is pretty predictable, but it's not like it doesn't bother you because both the book and the movie do a really good job of creating like these moments of tension, and you're like, even though you might be able to like sort of guess at what the entire arc of the story is, like like the moment to moment. Things in the book are the things that are like surprising.
How is this as far as like, because you know, the big triumph I think of Harry Potter is the fleshed out world.
Mm-hmm.
Does it feel like this world really is like lived in and exists, or is it kind of like surface level? Like that's what creates the story that we're trying to write?
I would say like when you get to see, because in the book, you don't really get to see a lot of the other districts, but in the film, they kind of show you some of the other districts, and it really kind of I think does a good job of setting the stage, like showing you how big the world is and how different like the districts are from the capital.
Mm-hmm. Well, the movie made something like $155 million in opening weekend.
I heard that the opening weekend for this movie was the top grossing opening weekend by a movie that wasn't a sequel, and that put it in like fifth place overall.
Yeah, it's crazy. $155 million this weekend, so obviously they're going to finish the trilogy.
They're actually already shooting two now in Asheville.
Oh, wow. Cool.
So very cool. All right. So recommended then.
Yeah. Definitely go check out Hunger Games.
I thought the movie might fall short and everybody be like,
I mean, they made changes, but the changes were acceptable. It wasn't like they bastardized anything with the changes that they made. Very minor changes.
Yeah.
But for the most part, the main story arc is identical. So,
The only thing that might be like annoying to someone like us is like the sort of WB love story, but it's not so bad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love is like the WB.
It kind of is.
Yeah. Sometimes she touches you where you don't want to be touched.
Right.
Just like the WB.
Oh, I feel violated just hearing that.
All right, well, let's take a quick break.
Cool.
I know our segments are all off today, but let's take a quick break before we jump into the world of Mass Effect 3. What I want to try to do as we plan the podcast on the podcast...
Yeah.
Is give everybody a heads up of when that segment starts and when it finishes.
Should just do like the sound of the Reapers.
It is going to be fully spoilerful.
Spoilerful, yeah.
So I don't want anybody to get something spoiled spoiled for them before they can actually.
I would say pretty much the whole back end of this podcast
Probably going to be a lot of spoilers. Yeah. So if you want to stop listening here, we totally understand because this is all going to be Mass Effect 3 from here on out. And there are going to be plenty of spoilers. So if you haven't finished and you don't want to hear the ending, then I would recommend stopping and coming back to this show later, like I did with
the
many
internet.
Podcasts.
With the internet, yeah.
All right, so quick break, and then we'll be back in Mass Effect 3. All right, cue Mass Effect 3 Reaper sound.
Hurry, run away before they get you.
Fly away as fast as you can.
Fly away. Did anybody actually ever get caught by them?
Oh, all the time.
What happened?
I never
got caught.
You lose.
You just lose the game?
Yeah.
It just ends?
You start back in the system.
It's cool. I feel that.
This game has for all the stuff that's awesome about this franchise, it has the most bizarre, like, game over. You know, because there's a lot of, like...
I didn't actually lose at any point. I mean, I died one
time. But I'm saying, like, there's a lot in, like... game studies literature about like not only how you win a game but like what losing feels like to the player.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, back in the day, they would just do, like, game over. Like, yeah. People don't like that. But some games have, like, elaborate death sequences or something happens.
Dead Space is probably the worst.
Yeah, Dead Space.
You play where you just get, like, mutilated by
something. Yeah, but it's like a gratifying death scene in this game. Yeah. In this game, like, a grenade can blow up next to you, and it's like, bomb, 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 bomb. You're like, come on. I hate that song.
For real. Nah. So, yeah, so for those that want to know, we are about to finally sit down and do our Mass Effect discussion, now that all of us have actually beaten the game.
Yes.
And so, again, if you are tuning in and you don't want to know what the ending of Mass Effect is like or what we think about it, then turn this off, rewind it, listen to the beginning again, tell your friends about it, do all that stuff.
Don't forget to rate the podcast
on it. Rate it on iTunes, retweet it. Then come back later after you beat Mass Effect.
Yes.
Let's start with Matt, because I kind of already have talked to Scott about this at length. So, Matt, I have not talked about. So, let's start out. What class did you play?
I was an infiltrator again.
As was I.
I kept my character from my 1 and 2 playthrough that I've done.
Nice.
Played through...
Did you get your face to transfer over, or did you have to redo your face?
My face transferred. I had everything. I was, like, fully started as if I was the guy who finished Mass Effect 2.
Nice.
Which was nice.
Yeah.
And I would say the transition into 3 is awesome.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that part. And I do want to preface this because we have a lot of Mass Effect fans.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed this game.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic fucking game.
Yeah.
I just had some issues with it
that
bothered me. So the game is like, oh, it's been 3 years. You've been locked up essentially with no way to do anything. And I really like that. I was happy they didn't do some weird, like, you died again. Like, I was going to be like, oh, come on.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I thought the game started off great. I want to preface, I'm really happy we're doing this review now and not a week ago because I did play it, and I played it in 4 days in like 12-hour gaming sessions.
So you had time to cool down and reflect.
Yeah, my brain was like ready to just be mad at everything in the world, not just the game. The positives, I thought the story was great. I felt good about it. I honestly didn't have the issue with the ending that the internet apparently had. I was kind of okay with it. Something that I never talk about, the guns felt fucking awesome in this game. I've never played a Mass Effect game and felt like I was shooting guns, and this time, like, the sniper rifle was just incredible. Everything sounded really good. Yeah. I know they said they took the team from Call of Duty did all the guns.
It was DICE.
DICE did it. Yeah. I mean, everything just sounded amazing and played really well and felt like a fucking, they had weight, you know, like a gun, and combat was awesome. I was really enjoying Infiltrator because I felt like I could sit in the distance, and then if a guy snuck up on me, I could turn around and just, you know, slice him with my
blade. Did you ever get into the gun range?
I never did because the game was bugged for me, and every time I opened the gun range, I hardlocked and couldn't finish.
Okay, we'll talk about that later.
Ouch.
The game had a lot of bugs. It was weird. This felt like the buggiest Mass Effect that I've ever played.
Okay.
But none that were game-stopping and none that were so annoying that I was like, oh, what the hell? It was a lot of glitchiness, a lot of character in and out, kind of like, or like cutscenes would happen and my guy would just be like driftily staring off into some weird distance.
One of my friends, our friends, I think it was actually, it was Micah. No, it was Derek. Derek had to see the death scene, Morden's death scene. His head was on backwards.
Yeah.
During the entire death scene. So all the emotion was just sucked out of that scene because he had no face because his head was on backwards. So he's singing his little song and the explosions are happening, but his head was backwards. And I was just laughing so hard.
Stuff like that. Just like weird glitchiness that happened. And then I had a couple places where it hard locked and I couldn't. And the gun range was one which sucked because I actually wanted to, like,
for me, it was just saving and loading. The only loading is really the only time that the game would lock up and.
Yeah, just odd, because that never happened to me in 1 or 2, that I remember. I don't remember coming away going, like, that was kind of buggy. Like, 3, I definitely felt like maybe it needed more time, which is weird to say, but it just felt off or rushed. The story, not including the ending, like I said, totally okay with the ending. I didn't really love it. I actually told Scott this, and I think he was surprised. I would say that my order of Mass Effects is 2-1-3. I think this is my least favorite Mass Effect that I've played. It felt really amorphous. Not as opposed to you guys, because I think you play it this way too, but I play the game very personally. Like, I like to play it as me making decisions, and Shepard is me, you know, like, that's the way I enjoy playing. I'd never go for, like, a perfect play. However the cards fall at the end is how the cards fall at the end, and that's...
Like, you don't intend to go full Paragon. You're just like, if no. In a certain situation, you're like, yeah,
I'll
you know
shoot
what?
A dude gonna... in the head if yeah. he's annoying me. Right. Now I'll punch the reporter for the third time because she annoys me. Like, but then there's other things where I do full Paragon type stuff, but it's because that's what felt right at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And none of those decisions felt like, other than gathering the forces that I needed, none of those decisions felt like they had any real consequence in my world. It just felt like... It felt very goal-oriented and very, like, driven to a, like, railroaded to a point, and not so much like I'm playing this game and making random decisions and all these crazy things are happening. It just kind of felt like, well, yeah, if I do this, I'll get, you know, the Solarians. And if I do, and there were a couple decisions that were a little gray area, but
yeah.
most of them felt pretty clear. It was like, if you want to beat the game, you're going to do this, you know?
I think the argument to that would be that the decisions you made in 1 and 2 kind of play out in 3,
mm-hmm.
whereas you're not making all of these massive decisions about, like, who lives and who dies, really, in 3 anymore.
You're getting the repercussions.
Yeah, you're getting the repercussions of those actions from 1 and 2. But I can totally understand your argument. Like, there were times where I was like, I did kind of feel like I was observing rather than taking an active part in a lot of the story. But I thought the story itself was still, even though I didn't feel as active in the story, I thought it was great. Like, I loved, like, Tuchanka was amazing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The whole thing with Tuchanka was amazing.
And that's the thing is that, to me, the moments were phenomenal. Like, every character... Nobody does character moments better than BioWare, and especially on the Mass Effect series. Like, the character moments you have with Rex or with, you know, Morden or whoever it might be, even Thane, who's, like, a B player in the second game. Like, every time you interact with somebody specifically, it always feels real. It always feels amazing. They write them incredibly. Like, those moments felt great. I had no problem with them. Just, it was like the over arc just fell a little flat. You know, I wanted it to be a little more, maybe, and it just didn't end up being a little more. Like, it wasn't like I hated it and I disliked the whole game because of it. It just was like, meh. And then the biggest complaint about the story I had was, I feel like if you didn't read any of the comics or you didn't read any of the books, there's a huge gap between Elusive Man from number 2 and Elusive Man from number 3. Like, all of a sudden, he's a super evil dude that's trying to take over the world with the Reapers, and you're like,
Yeah.
What? Like, there was no blanks filled in between that and there.
That's true. And, you know, Scott and I are both people that have read the comics and read the books, so, you know, it does hint at that it's possible that there's some indoctrination going on leading him sort of towards the dark side. But if you finish Mass Effect 2 and then jump right into Mass Effect 3, you're kind of like...
He's the bad guy, like,
kinda,
immediately.
You're kind of disconnected, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, he's just immediately the bad guy, and you're like...
Yeah.
What? He was paying for me. Like, I know we broke up, not in a nice way, but, like, we didn't hate each other. Like, he wasn't trying to kill me immediately, you know? It felt very, like, I feel like that comic series about him especially fills in, like, a billion blanks as to what's going on with him, and then that never gets, you know, I feel like between 1 and 2 they did a really good job of being like, well, this is what happened in the universe while you were gone, you know? And this one was just kind of like, here you go. Start saving the world. You need to again.
And really, like, the last 3 books, and actually all of the books, like, really help you understand what, like, is going on at the Grissom Academy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very important location.
You know, two or three of the, I think there's, like, 4 comic runs that have been out so far. Like, I think 2 or 3 of those runs, like, have to do with, like, Arya and, like, Elusive Man and Omega and, like, what's happening with, like, what happened to the Elusive Man, like you said. Like, there's a lot of, like, empty spaces to found there.
And part of me feels like it's cool that they use that. They were like, hey, sorry, you need to check out the rest of the universe. And then part of me felt like, well, it also made me feel really disconnected because it wasn't part of my playthrough. That was just told to me. It was like, it wasn't like I created that world that created those comics, because it's impossible because everybody has, like, a different decision path.
It's also kind of odd, and I know there's been a lot of hatred towards the character of Kai Lang, because he's not someone that appeared in 1 or 2. He appears in the books, and then he appears in 3 as pretty much, I want to say, you know, he has the capacity to kill 3 of your crew, depending on what you do. And that's a pretty big villain.
You know,
that's a pretty big villain to just throw at the player that has not encountered him in the past.
Did you also feel like, because obviously the Reapers are the overarching villain. They're the ones that you're trying to stop. But the Elusive Man feels like the main he's the Saren of this game, it feels like. You know, and Kai Ling's kind of his henchman.
He's like, Kai Ling is like the right-hand man in the books.
But I feel like in one with Saren, which is probably the easiest comparison, you deal with Saren a lot more leading up to fighting Saren. And in this one, you only really interact with the Elusive Man three times.
Mm-hmm.
All three of them are just talking points because he's not actually there.
Yeah.
And it just felt very like, I don't know if the ending was just, I don't know if, well, I know what people are having problem with, but I feel like part of it for me was just like, it just kind of like, it's just, you're just like, oh, here he is. And the, you know, game's not over. And you're like,
yeah.
Like it just, it's like an immediate battle with him, which isn't even a battle. And then the game just ends.
It's like such a, the story is like so huge though, in the sense that like, in the, like, on one hand, like, Shepard's trying to gather all these forces together, mm-hmm. and on the other hand, like, all of a sudden there's, like, this human splinter group that is, like, trying to get in your way, you know, at every opportunity they can try to get in your way. And it's just, I mean, I see what you mean, like, it's weird to, like, get to the end and, like, the human splinter group is the one that's, like, standing in your way at the end and not, like...
Well, I mean, I don't think they could have faced you against a Reaper again. That wouldn't have made any sense. Like, it would have been weird. You would have been like, why am I facing, like, the weird Reaper robot or something
The original plan, they even had, I don't know if you guys have looked at the Art of the Mass Effect Universe book that they put out. But,
not the full
one. The original plan was to have Elusive Man be completely indoctrinated and have him be this giant monster that you had to fight.
Wow.
And I don't know if I'm really opposed to that. Like, I kind of miss having a boss battle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't it feel like you didn't get one? Like,
Kai Ling was your boss battle.
He wasn't that hard for me. I don't know if he was super hard for you guys.
I think I tried a few times. I tried a couple times.
The battle, I mean, I fought him. It was the insanity. You're on
insanity too.
And it was like, I will say, like, I don't know that it was difficult because I beat him the first time, but the fight was entertaining. It was super dicey. Like, when the covers started, like, breaking up everywhere, like, it was taxing. I think
the Infiltrator breaks the game a little bit, I'll be honest with you. Because there were a lot of fights that I know were supposed to be like, here's the fucking fight! And then I just sat in the back and plugged away with my sniper rifle while I sent two guys up to kill
things. It breaks aggro, so...
And it's like, I'm totally fine the entire time, so...
Mm-hmm.
I rarely died in the game. I died if I fucked up. Like, I had to personally screw up something in combat to actually die.
Right.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you're nowhere near combat. I mean, there were some fights where I was literally so far away that, like, I was killing dudes before the battle would even... Like, I'd take four guys out, and then they're like, whoa! Like, trying to turn around, and then I'd plug four more, and I'm like, all right, let's move on. Like, the Infiltrator kind of breaks the game a little bit.
In a good way.
in a fun way.
I thought that the Vanguard broke the game in a good way, because
maybe that's what they intend, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I mean... Like, it's all or nothing, but, like, I was telling Ash, like, there's points in the game where, in Mass Effect 3 especially, where they're, like, they'll keep sending enemies at you until you get somewhere, and, like, as a Vanguard, I just looked for an enemy that was standing, like, where I needed to go, and then just biotic charged over to where they were, and I was like, I'm out. Like, skipped a whole, like, battlefield of enemies, but I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah, so, like I said, game is awesome. This series is easily, it's got to be probably my top gaming series of all time. I mean, it's just that good. And the third one being the worst still makes it better than 99% of all games that come out, you know?
Yeah.
And everyone...
That's an important qualifier. So, like, for all the... You know, for any complaints we might have about this game, it's still better.
Yeah, I mean...
Like, than...
Pretty much
everything. Like, a bad Mass Effect story to me is like, oh. Yeah. You know, not like, oh, that was... God, why did I waste so much time playing? You're like, oh, this was so horrible. It's just like...
Yeah.
Oh, I was expecting just like something else. I don't know, you know, something a little different.
Yeah. Well, let's specifically, just for the quick rundown, Scott played as a Vanguard on Insanity. I played as an Infiltrator as well. I played my same Shepard from 1, 2, and 3. Scott played his same Shepard from 1, 2, 3. I think we all picked different endings from what I understand.
Yes, I think we did.
I think we did. And mine, I picked mine, because it was literally about 5 in the morning.
Mine was as well.
I was like cross-eyed, and they're like, pick something. And I was just like, I don't know what these are. And like, I slowly, like, Shepard limping was pretty much how I felt inside at that point. And I just kind of like, I'm gonna go look at this one. So I like limped over to the one on the right, didn't know what it was. I didn't remember what the fuck the colors were or anything. And then I was like, what is this one? And then it wouldn't let me turn around.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, shit, I guess this is the ending I'm picking, and it was Destroy.
Destroy, yeah.
Which turns out was, I guess, the good ending. So,
quote,
I'm using finger quotes. It was the good ending. And, so the Destroy ending, I destroy all, basically all technology in the universe. I destroy the mass relays. I destroy the Geth. I destroy basically all artificial intelligence. I destroy the Reapers. The Citadel supposedly crashes to Earth, and my Shepard takes a breath at the end. So I got the living. I got the living Shepard ending, so, which I guess is because my galactic readiness was so high, and all that.
My question is, you know, because you were Shepard was rebuilt in the second game, so why didn't Shepard die?
Yeah,
you're like supposed to be part synthetic.
Because everyone tells you throughout the whole game, like, Shepard, you're part synthetic too.
Yeah,
you
know,
like,
well, I think, and we'll hear your endings first, and then we'll dissect.
Yeah, yeah.
What's going on?
So Scott,
you. Well, I mean, like, I played the way Matt didn't play, which was, like, I'm just going to beat Paragon all the way through. So, like, I saw blue at the end, and I was like, sure. I was like, and honestly, same with you. I was like, they explained the endings to me, but I didn't get that they were showing me, like, that you needed to walk towards one of the three endings.
Right.
So when they're like, choose, and I was like, which one is which? I don't even remember.
Yeah.
Like, so I walked over to the blue one. I was like, well, I guess I'm going to pick blue because...
Because blue is Paragon.
Because blue is Paragon.
It wasn't actually.
But yeah, there's like, if you watch the internet.
It was reversed.
Yeah. So I was just like, yeah, sure, whatever, I'll pick the blue one. And then it was like all the Reapers left, and I was like, okay, great. I did it, you know?
Yeah.
So yours was Control.
Control, yeah.
And what happens to your Shepard?
Just...
The Citadel still crash and all that stuff?
No. I didn't even know that happened. Like, no.
But
like,
it just still destroys all the...
The mass... Yeah, the relays relay are destroyed, units. And Shepard, like, basically, like, dematerializes in the beam.
Oh, okay.
And then he sends the Geth away?
Or yeah, mean the and then, the Reapers just, like, vanish up into space or whatever.
Okay. Come back later to kill us.
And then, like, your party, like, is the people that get out of the ship, like, when the Normandy sets down on the jungle planet.
And everybody that I've talked to has had different people leaving the ship.
Really? It's not just the people that were in your party at the
end?
Yeah,
no. It's different people.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I thought it was just the last two people you had with you, because that's who got off the ship for me.
No, I thought that's what it might be, too, but then I started seeing, and I was like, oh, people got randomized. It's like it wasn't randomized, but it has something to do with your game. And they,
yeah, I had Liara, Joker, and Javik, who was not in my party.
Weird.
I had Javik, Joker, and Edie.
I took, Garrus and Liara get off the ship at the end.
Yeah.
I took them into the final battle because I was thinking, like, sci-fi, like, heroic action story style, and I was like, well...
Yeah.
In the final battle, I guess, like, Star Wars style, I'm going to take my girlfriend and my best friend.
Yeah.
You know, because I realized, I never put together the fact that Garrus was supposed to be, like, your buddy, like, throughout the whole game, because I wasn't really, like...
Or your lover.
Well, yeah, or your lover, yeah. But I never really put that together, that he was supposed to be, like, your bud.
You did the friendship mission with him, right, where he takes you up and you...
Oh, shoot, yeah, and you do, like, the shooting, the sniping. Yeah.
That's great. I love that. That's one of my favorite
scenes. I let him win, too.
Yeah, I let him win, too. Yeah. I just...
Yeah, you didn't let him win? Oh, fuck him, I'm better than
he is. Did you? What happens if you let him win, or if you win?
He you shoot the can, and you're like, give him back the gun, and he says something along the lines of, like... He cracks a joke, and then you go, like, you make a joke basically of, like, yeah, well, one day you can be as good as the best or something like that. And then he just laughs. He's like, all right, man, well, we'll be back. He goes, next time we'll try it with people shooting at us or something like that.
Awesome.
And then you walk off. Like, you're still buddies. It doesn't do anything.
I do have something that I want to say about the ending.
Yeah,
and it's not, like, I read people's concerns about the ending, and my concerns were not those concerns. Like,
okay.
The concern, like... In my mind, I tried to envision what the ending of the game would be like.
Yeah.
And I sort of, like, envisioned, like, sort of a Star Wars-type, like, battle being fought on, like, three fronts simultaneously. So, like, I thought that in the process of gathering all these forces, I would get to see some kind of ground battle with, like, Krogans, like, charging alongside you and, like, knocking over, like, husks and stuff like that.
Yeah, because that's,
like,
what you spent all those hours. Yeah. Not to get points. Like, I didn't spend all those hours, like, doing that crap to get points. Yeah. I did that shit because I wanted to see that unfold.
Yeah, and then I thought about, like, in the end of the first game, like, how, like, the Alliance shows up and there's, like, this space battle against the Reaper at the Citadel. And I thought, like, oh, cool. The Quarians are going to do that with the Asari and the Alliance fleet's going to be there and it's going to be, like, space battle, like...
And Arachni, maybe?
Yeah, Yeah, I thought, like...
They didn't even show up!
I thought Arachni would show up and, like...
They didn't even show... I couldn't believe the Arachni didn't show up.
I thought they would be on the ground, too.
Your Arachni did? Arachni showed up.
Really?
Yeah.
In your final battle?
Not, like, in video.
No, oh, that's okay. What I'm saying.
Yeah, they say they're there. They're like, oh, the Arachni are blah, 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 blah.
Oh, okay.
You remember, like, the end of the, the end of the Two Towers, Lord of the Rings?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
Like, I thought the end of Mass Effect would be like that, yeah. where, like, the Ghost Army comes in at the end.
Because it wasn't, like, an epic battle. Like, it was just, like...
I expected an epic battle.
That's what I did as well. Okay, I did, too. I think we all did. And that was definitely disappointing, because it was like, well, here's... I mean, it was cool in one way, because they do the whole, like, no, this game is about Shepard saving the universe. Yes. Like, it's not about an epic battle. Sorry, it's about you doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, but... So, I chose...
Synthesis.
Yes, I actually did understand all the endings and what I was supposed to do. I think at, like, 40 hours of straight gameplay, I had, like, become one with Mass Effect at some point, and I was on 3 hours of sleep. And
oh, man.
So, I knew what was going on, and I thought about it, like I do with all my decisions in Mass Effect, and I was like, you know what? My Liara would be fucking pissed at me if I, like, killed all the things and just, like, walked back down, like, hey, what's up? Yeah. I'd be like, what the fuck, dude? Like, and also, the Destroy one pissed me off because I was like, I spent a lot of time helping Legion, who sacrificed his life to, like, give me the Geth,
so that the
Geth are part of my team. And I was like, I'm not going to wipe out all of the Geth after, like, becoming buddies with this guy over number two and him giving his life to, like...
Because the Quarians are kind of dicks.
Yeah, the Quarians are kind of dicks.
Yeah.
You know, I love Tally, but, like, Tally is not an example.
But when you see those videos of how the Quarians treated the Geth, you're like, oh, you guys are assholes.
Yeah, you guys are dicks. I would have rebelled, too. Yeah. Come on now. So, I thought about that, and then I thought about Edie. I was like, wouldn't Edie get destroyed? Like, wouldn't Edie be just diced up because she's...
And Joker would hate you.
Yeah, Joker would be pissed at me. I was like, that just doesn't seem right. And then I thought about Control, and I was like, well, no, Control's not even, like, that's not me. That's not the way I've played the game at all.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I was like, you know, Synthesis makes sense. Like, I'm going to give up my life
to create balance. Break the cycle.
Yeah, to break the cycle and create balance in the world. And that's what I've been trying to do this entire time.
Right.
So I did the Synthesis one, and essentially you evaporate, and then...
I think it's the same evaporation,
Yeah, it blows up all the Mass Effect relays, and then the ship lands, and everybody gets off, and they're half... Which is not at all what I thought was going to be the ending. By the way, the way I understood what they said to me was that I was about to wipe out the entire world and start off a new one with, like, new half-synthetic
life. Like, new life.
New life.
I thought so, too.
That's what I thought it meant, and it didn't at all. Apparently, somehow, magically, everybody becomes half-synthetic or half-human.
Which is odd.
And Edie and Joker and Javik get off the jet when they or get off the plane when they crash land on some new planet that no one's ever seen, apparently.
Well, here's the thing about the endings. There are certain consistencies in all the endings. One thing that happens in all of them is the mass relays are destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
So that is definitely something that they want to be canon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No matter what, the mass relays are destroyed. No matter what, your Shepard is either fucked up or dead. So they want that to happen.
Yeah.
Yep.
They also, all the armies of the world are abandoned on Earth. So they want that to happen.
Yeah.
No matter what. Okay.
And then the jet crash lands
on the planet on,
or Normandy. The jet, Normandy crash lands on some planet somewhere. Yes.
So that's something they definitely want to happen. So
and Joker always gets off. It seems like
yes,
yeah.
Joker always lives. He always lives, even if he's half robot. Joker.
Yeah,
which is interesting
with half robot Edie.
So
yeah,
but in terms of the campaigns and the people filing, you know, letters to the government. And all of that about the ending. Yeah, I mean, it is ridiculous. I think all of us wished the ending were a little bit different. That we had a lot of. I mean, it basically raises so many questions.
But how could you not find at least one thing like to your disliking about the ending when you invested, like when the hardcore fans invested so many games into it? I think any ending would have been
right. I mean,
not to the standard of somebody's
like I said, like. Somebody, I challenge anyone to name a long-running series that had an ending that everybody loved.
Yeah, Matt and I talked about this online. I'm like...
Lost?
When I got to the ending of this game, I was like, oh, well, that's how sci-fi ends. Have you ever seen Contact?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen BSG? Have you ever seen Lost? Like, they all end weird.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's just what happens in sci-fi, you know?
Well, I think the argument to that, and I totally agree, and I've seen the endings, all the endings you just talked about, and they all do end weird. But the question is, why? And that's the thing what a lot of fans are upset about. It's like, well, why did you have to try and make it artsy? Why did you have to art it up? Why did you have to, like, give it this grand, like, you know, it almost gets to the point where it's, like, almost a mystical sort of ending with a little child appearing, you know, and, like...
Like, all of a sudden you're pondering questions about the universe.
Yeah,
and
the Mass Effect series, for the most part, has been about, you know, save the world, heroism, blowing stuff up. You and your buddies saving the galaxy, and all of a sudden here's this ending that
isn't really...
But has it been? Because I don't think that's true. I think it's about whatever anybody makes the game.
That's
the game
true.
To me was doing what was right. It had nothing to do with shooting shit with my buddies. It had everything to do with, like, playing the game, playing, like, making decisions that felt right to me. Like, it was my morality instilled in a game.
That's true.
I think the problem that we get caught up in is that is this idea of the good ending or the perfect ending, which, because every game has had that
happy ending.
Yeah, <it is.
laughs> but every game has had that leading up to this point. Everybody's always had the, oh, I didn't do well enough to get the perfect ending.
Yeah.
At the end.
Like, there was like some fan art that I saw, and it was just like everybody just kicking it, like on the Normby, like drinking PBR, and I'm like, I don't want that ending either. You know, like, maybe some people do. Like, I don't really like the concept of, like, the ending should be happy. Like, I don't think so. Like,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure that I was going to lose Shepard at the end of this game. You know?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, good Lord, how many times do they tell you that you're dead or dying in that? Number three, they literally over and over again go, well, you know, you could die at the end of this, or you're going to die at the end of this, or you were dead just a little bit ago. This is the last time you're going to get to try again. I guess you're already dead now. And you're like, oh, my Lord,
I
get it.
It's the hero's sacrifice. You know what I mean? I think it's...
No, I agree. Yeah. And I do feel that Shepard should, you know, at the end of the trilogy, Shepard should die. But the thing that I don't agree with, and that I've talked to a lot of other super fans about this, is I don't feel like the other characters in the series got the proper send-off that they deserve.
Okay. Totally agree.
And if they are planning on releasing, which they are now, it's been completely confirmed, they're releasing DLC that wraps the story up, is it something that we're going to have to pay for, and was that a calculated decision on the part of EA? And if that is the answer, then there's something seriously wrong with the model. The fact that you're going to have to pay for the ending that you want to see to find out what happens to these characters, that may be a little bit underhanded.
But something tells me, I mean, I think one, like, that's probably not a BioWare decision, that's probably an EA decision.
Yeah,
I think,
absolutely.
Like, DLC is out of the game maker's hands at this point. It's more like in the publisher's hands.
Yeah.
The other thing is that I wouldn't have been surprised if, even despite what happened with this ending, that EA told them, like, hey, we're going to put this game out in March, and you're going to release some DLC, like, in April.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think something could have been playing the whole time. And it just happens to be something that happens at the end of the game. And they're like, oh, that's convenient. Everybody's mad. We have DLC.
Yeah.
You know?
I think also, to that point of the people not getting their rightful kind of ending, I felt like a lot of that was weird to me in the game. It felt weird that, almost, like, what is it? It's probably 60 or 70% of the people that you've met between 1 and 2 show up and die immediately in number 3. Like, it's like, they're like, hey, I'm here, I'm dead, sorry. Hey, I'm here, I'm dead, sorry. And I was just like, it felt really forced to me. Like,
yeah.
Would all my friends really die? I guess they would. It's the end of the world. You know, like, they're all trying to do something heroic.
I think that all depends on your playthroughs, though, because I didn't lose very many people.
I lost Morden, I lost Thane, I lost...
Legion.
I think those you have to lose.
Maybe the entire third game was, like, getting to say goodbye to all those characters.
Well, it was Seinfeld. I mean, the last episode of Seinfeld, every single character that's ever been in Seinfeld shows up for some reason or another.
Okay.
And they tie it all into the ending of Seinfeld. Yeah. And it's like, it's awesome. It feels really cool. But at the same time, I do agree that then I got to the very end of the game. I, like, on my walk up to go see Anderson, I'm, like, saying hi to all the people before I leave. And by the way, I could not find Liara. I think.
Oh, really?
I missed one person. I think it was Liara.
Oh, really?
Which sucks, because that was my
thing. Yeah.
That was my thing. But,
my lady friend.
But, it did feel weird. Now that you say that, it did feel weird that, like, you go, you do your thing, you have your death battle, you know, whatever, and all of those characters are just apparently hanging out on Earth somewhere. Like,
yeah.
At some point, they're still
somehow
there.
They all got back on the
and
Normandy.
And then they all got on the Normandy. Yeah, I was like...
Even though some of them followed you into the beam of death.
Yeah.
Did that, I mean, like, there's definitely got to be, you know, just some sort of timeline issue that we're not really aware of.
Yeah.
You know, and they're allowed to take, you know, they have artistic license. They can do whatever. There might have been an hour... No, it wouldn't have been an hour. I don't know.
There was part of me that hoped, and I know no one would have been happy with this ending, but I would have been happy. I would have thought they had balls to do this, that the Reapers were going to win. Like, no matter what you did, that at the end of the day, the Reapers were going to destroy all life and be like, sorry, we've told you for two games that this is how it works.
We've done this for millions of years. Yeah.
We've done this for millions of years. It's never going to not work.
Yeah.
Like, sorry, everybody, you know.
Yeah.
Or that, like, the catalyst or the, what was the whole thing called? The
The Crucible?
Crucible would, like, somehow totally backfire. Like, just be, like,
a turn Reaper everyone tool. To skeletons.
Yeah, like, be a Reaper
Indiana
tool.
Indiana Jones, Ark of the Covenant. We're just like,
part of me thought that that's what EA was going to do, and that's what everybody was pissed off about it, because I hadn't finished, and the internet had already erupted about the ending.
Yeah, yeah. So, I'm glad I finished when I did, because, like, I started to hear stuff like, have you heard the ending yet? And I'm like, no, no,
dude,
and I just, like, plugged myself in.
I opened Facebook once, and Mass Effect had posted, we're sorry to hear about the unhappy fans of the... I'm like, Jesus! And I'm, like, turning, closing Facebook. I'm like, I can't look at anything right now.
Yeah, that's rough.
But I mean, like, to all the discussion that's happening on the internet, I think is also a testament to how much people care about this game.
Absolutely, so, absolutely. Definitely. I mean, there's, you know, it's an incredible, it's one of the most, you know, brilliant... I don't even consider it a game anymore. It's like, it's a wonderful universe, amazing characters, and is literally just a beautiful piece of art. And I think that people being this upset is a testament to how great it really is. Have you guys? I know Scott, you looked at the whole indoctrination theory thing. Did Matt?
I watched about 10 minutes of it. I couldn't get.
It started out as like a 12-minute video. Now it's like a 20-minute video.
It's 20-something minutes long.
Oh, is it?
I started at work. Made a new video.
I haven't seen the.
I started at work and started watching it. I was like 3 hours sleep and just beaten Mass Effect. I'm like, I can't do this right now. It's like killing me.
Interesting. The whole indoctrination theory basically says that throughout the about midway through the second game, or even probably earlier than that, the Shepherd slowly is being indoctrinated.
Well, if you want to get technical about it, you know, the Elusive Man found an artifact in his comic book, and that's how his eyes started glowing. So you can argue at that point, he started to become indoctrinated. And you can similarly say that when Shepherd touched the beacon on Eden Prime, he also had some of that junk in him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The Reaper junk. So, it's totally understandable. Like,
where I get lost on that, though, is the artifacts are not Reaper artifacts. They're
Prothean.
The Prothean beacons, I think, aren't they beacons for the Reapers, though? Or are they?
They're beacons warning of
this warning
in the Prothean warnings. Language. But, I mean, and from what, I mean, there are different people that say, well, if Shepherd is immune to indoctrination because of his contact with the Prothean beacon, the Prothean beacon, like, protected him. But there's so many weird little things, like James saying that he hears the ringing. Did you see that part of the video? There's a part like where you go down to the cargo deck.
And they hear a noise.
Yeah, you hear that ringing, and they're like, yeah, well, what is it? And that's like one of the symptoms of indoctrination is James. Actually Vega.
Oh, Vega.
Yeah. One of the symptoms is actually hearing noises that aren't there. And there's just a lot of little weird things, like the fact that the child in the beginning interacts with no one else.
Yeah.
And no one else sees him. He helps himself into the shuttle.
Mm-hmm.
He's, like, basically looking at Shepherd, which is really creepy.
The indoctrination video, like, really makes a compelling argument for
really
the
does.
Theory that Shepherd has been struggling both externally and internally the whole time.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like, I don't know about the whole ending being, like, manifestation in his mind or whatever. I mean...
that because you were talking to me about that, and I was like, but how? And you were like, well, yeah, he didn't do this, this, or this. And I'm like, well, then the Reapers won. And you're like, well, no, because then I'm like, well, he either got on the ship and blew everything up, or the Reapers won.
Yeah,
like,
there's somebody fired the Crucible, or somebody did not fire the Crucible.
Yeah,
like that's the difference.
Yeah. Like, because before he ever gets to that point where he would have been hallucinating the rest of it, like, shit was already in line going wrong. Like, the Crucible's already misfiring before you ever get in the ship and go up. It never fired.
Well, they needed the Citadel arms to open to fire the Crucible.
Right.
So that's why you had to get up there and open the arms, and then, like, at that point, that's when you open the arms, that's when Hackett comes on, and he's like, hey, it's not working, you need to do something else, and then Shepherd passes out. So maybe everything after that point in the game is
possibly.
But then again, my question is that even if all that stuff was real up until the point where he passes out on the levitating platform, how does Shepherd get back down to Earth in a destroy scenario? That's still the only question I have about the indoctrination video.
Yeah.
But how does any of that, I just still don't get it. How does any of that happen? Like, if he never presses a button.
Well, the indoctrination video claims that from the point that Harbinger beam kills everybody on Earth.
Yeah.
And then you get back up and struggle towards the beam. At that point, everything is in his mind, in Shepherd's
mind.
Right,
but I'm saying if that's the case, then the Reapers won.
No, there's still like, there's tons of questions.
No, if that's the case, then we don't really know what happens because there's DLC.
So, like, in theory, the DLC loaded up, Shepherd would do all this ending stuff, and then DLC would start with Shepherd getting back up again on Earth, like, after being hit by the beam, and then doing something different.
Yeah.
I really hope they don't revisionist everything in the game,
because people are pissing their pants
over it.
Yeah.
I don't think they will.
I think there was something planned in the works, like, this is my opinion.
I mean, they have to end it this way. Like, you can't end a long-running, massive series where everybody has control over their own story with, like, a solid ending of, like, this is exactly what happened. Because then everybody's going to be like, that's not what would happen.
I think people wanted there to be, like, 16 different permutations of the ending.
But we talked about that.
It's impossible.
A year ago, we were like, there's no way they can do... It's physically impossible to manage the amount of shit that could have happened.
People have always wanted, like, a holodeck, and we just don't have technology for holodeck.
I left the collector's ship... Intact, and other than mention of it, I don't really think it affected my game.
Really?
There's one mission. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, you get extra for it. That's it.
Oh, I got extra galactic readiness for it?
For saving the ship, I think.
Because I started at 50 across the board.
No, I mean, like, when you get to the point where you see...
Jacob?
Yeah.
Because that was the only mission that I was like, oh, this is directly related, because they say that when you meet Jacob again, you say hello, yeah, scientists. They were all scientists working on the collector ship.
Oh, interesting. Oh. Not in my
I think they said something different about them in mine. Yeah.
They said they were all building, like, Reaper tech off the collector ship.
Interesting.
Interesting.
And then they all joined my team, and that's probably where I get the bump in collecting readiness.
Interesting.
But this leads into the question that we asked the internet, we got a massive mountain of replies to.
We did.
I like the way you worded this question, though. I think it was a good way to word the question, because it really puts the argument in context. The question is, should a video game's community influence the content of said game? Is video game democracy a good thing?
It's a tricky question, because I think all of us, like, have either talked to developers, have tweeted a developer, have, you know, participate in a forum of some sort, and we definitely love our opinions and our voices to be heard. But I think the thing the internet's being really naive about right now is they're saying, well, because we all yelled about the Mass Effect ending, they're putting an end DLC. Bullshit. No. They were doing that from the beginning. You just happened to yell very, very loud.
Yeah.
And they were already working on it long before you said anything. But the question does, I mean, do you think video game democracy is a good thing? Do you think the average consumer, the average game player, should have any say in what developers, professionals are actually doing? Or do you think that this open communication between the average consumer and the developer is a good or a bad thing?
I think, I like the way that BioWare has been handling the situation, like specifically for Mass Effect. They're basically just saying, like, hey, you guys don't like the game? Like, I want to hear about it. Like, what didn't you like? And I think,
but they've also said, we're happy to take constructive criticism.
Of course.
Like, what we're not going to take is people brutalizing our writers.
Well, yeah, the thing that's, they're really, like, kind of bringing a little civility to the internet by saying, like, we can have a discussion about the game, like, you know, previous to that. We can have a discussion about our, like, what our staff said.
Yeah.
Like, this discussion cannot be, like, destructive, you know, like.
I think there's a fine line between passion about the project and entitlement.
Yeah, you don't own the game.
Yeah,
like you might have a licensed copy of the game.
License is the key word. That one.
But you don't own this thing. You know.
Nor did you from the start. You own your story, and maybe that's where people are getting pissed.
Yeah.
But even then, you own your version of their story. Like, it's not like you don't own the rights to how things are created and how they're written and done. But
like, if there's like two endings in a choose your own adventure book and you don't like either of them, you're like, well, that's too bad.
You didn't, you know? Yeah, sorry, that's what was
great. Yeah, like, I wrote this book and it was like a fun thing for you to do, and like, that's it.
Yeah.
That's the end, yeah.
Like, I don't know. I really think, like, let's take BioWare out of this discussion and make it more general for a second. Like, I think that if you get to the end of the game or you play a game and you don't like it, you'll just be like, oh, okay, well, maybe I won't play that game next time, and it's like, we'll just agree to disagree. You know, like, there's, like, developers that I see names on things and I won't play their games anymore. Like, but that's really where it ends. I'm not going to write this developer an angry letter and be like, oh, these gameplay mechanics are atrocious.
Like, that makes me wonder something. Do you think if this, not to bring it back to BioWare, but to kind of bring it back to BioWare, if this was somehow the, this doesn't even make sense, but let's say this was somehow the ending of Mass Effect 2, and 3 was going to be coming out a year or so later, do you think this pisses off fans away from BioWare and away from Mass Effect, or do you think they're just mad because it's the title they care about?
I think people are mad because it's the end.
Yeah.
You know, people got mad at the end of Lost because they wanted more.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree.
Like,
yeah.
I think...
Sopranos, the black screen.
Yeah, I think just knowing that you've reached the end of, like, this particular storyline, like, makes you, like, you're filled with all these emotions. And, yeah. Like, you just...
And I would say it is a pretty... Other than the points you brought up about canon, it is a pretty definitive ending to this run. Sure. Like, yeah. Especially in yours and mine, their Shepard does not exist anymore, you know, let alone... I mean, I guess, you know, I think somebody points out in here, like, Shepard's died and come back before. They've already ruined that kind of story of canon. Like, so obviously once you stop death, then it really doesn't matter anymore at the end of the day. But it does seem like it's ended, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's over, so.
It's interesting. So let's go to our awesome friends and community who gave us some great replies. The first is from Axel99, Jesse Lamb. She says, I think fans shouldn't speak for other fans. Player feedback is important, but playing armchair designer isn't helping anyone make gameplay design decisions. Many gameplay design decisions have been made early, and if fans get involved, it just exacerbates an existing condition of getting something approved up the chain. So that's an interesting point. I mean, at what point is too much involvement a bad thing? You know, at what point, I mean, I understand, like, right now, because of Twitter and because of the internet and because of forums, there is a really fine line. I mean, developers do ask the community what they want.
You almost have direct access to these people, which is something that you didn't have before.
Yeah, right. Which is strange. And that thing that's kind of scary is, do these opinions end up swaying their decision? I mean, already we saw earlier this year, or last year, when the Mass Effect ending got leaked all over the internet. Some Russian site leaked the ending. They literally changed the ending. Because of
the I didn't actually ever watch that video.
I never watched it.
Yeah, I don't either. So I never saw it. We will not spoil the spoiled ending of the
old spoiled ending. I don't even know what it was.
Yeah, I don't either.
Now I kind of want to look it up.
I don't want to know at all.
I do. I want to know. Anyway, so let's go ahead and plow through some of these.
Yeah.
Henny Art, Bethany says, I think community feedback can be important and useful to a point, but I feel the creative powers that be also shouldn't be required to bend to every demand made upon them. Moderation, like anything else.
Agreed. Absolutely.
And I think we're going to see a lot of that.
Justin Banks says, to a certain point, yes, but filing a lawsuit with the FTC over an ending to a video game is crossing the line.
Yeah. Can you believe people did that?
I think honestly,
it's like internet. It's kids. Yeah. There's a weird sense of entitlement that is like just beyond me that I don't understand when people are like, oh, fuck this, I'll sue him because this is my thing. And you're like, no, it's not. You know?
I think that the lawsuit was over false advertising because they said we were promised choice and we weren't given choice in the end.
Yeah, we were given choice. That just wasn't the choice.
And I don't remember signing anything that said you will get choice.
Yeah.
I don't think that ever happened. So I don't think his lawsuit.
I mean, if you think about the end of the game as more of like a sort of like a literary device and not like a part in a video game, like, they really are saying to you, like, you get to choose the way in which to shape the future of the galaxy. Like, that's kind of like a big deal, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
No, but people don't, I think because it was such a personal thing with them and Shepard, they're not viewing it as, oh, I'm shaping the Mass Effect gallery from here on out. They're viewing it as, what the fuck, Shepard just went down like a pansy? Like, no.
I don't know how many of these people exist, but I'd almost want to talk to somebody about this game who has only played Mass Effect 3 and really just picked it up.
I wonder how many of that there is, too.
Like, I just want to... Oh, you think those people were mad at the end, too?
I think it's highly possible.
You know what? I also think, and we've said this offline, is that I think that if the first person made it to the internet after finishing the game and said, the ending was so, like, thought-provoking and interesting, that would be what the internet was talking about next week.
It was funny, a lot of the early reviewers didn't really speak negatively about the ending.
Right.
They gave it very high reviews. It's still reviewed very highly.
Critically, the ending had no issues. Yeah. Critically, this game got lauded and that the ending was fantastic and the writing was great. There were no critics that came out. This was people who just showed up and said, hey, I don't like the ending. And then it just blew up into this like massive, I hate the ending campaign.
Yeah.
But yeah, like somebody who just played Mass Effect 3 only, like a casual fan, picked up the game, I heard it was a shooter, I heard it was good. I'd like to talk to them about what they think about what happened in this game. Or if they even care. Yeah. Maybe they're just like, oh, that was cool. I'm going to move on to what came out. I'm going to play Binary Domain next.
Yeah.
Whatever. Drop in the bucket.
Well, but I mean? Feel like, you know, comparing it to an ending like, we talked about this, comparing it to an ending like Assassin's Creed, where the ending of Assassin's Creed 2 comes kind of out of nowhere. You're like, what the fuck? Like, there's like weird pyramid god lady talking to me all of a sudden in a voice I can barely understand over my speakers. Like, it's really odd and it's really like throttling. Like, you're like, what the fuck just happened? I'm playing like a weird sci-fi game all of a sudden. And like, but I didn't get so mad. Like, it just, I don't know. It didn't.
I mean, I think the last time that we even came close, and I mean, like, if Mass Effect is like a 10 on coming close, and like this other game was like a 5, I would say the last thing we really talked about in depth about this was Red Dead and the end to that game.
Right.
Yeah.
And we weren't even like mad. We were just discussing the ending.
Yeah. because it was like, oh, there's two ways that could have gone. I think the difference though,
because it's like a branching story.
That's a straight up, like, here's your narrative and Mass Effect.
So because Mass Effect had so many choices and allowed the player to tailor their own, you think that's really what the backlash is?
People are just too tied to their character and they wanted it to end the way they wanted their character to end as opposed to feeling like they're playing through a story.
And I also think because 2 was so good, and, you know,
for some of us.
Yeah.
Well, I still like 2, but since 2 was so good, a lot of people, the expectations were just unreasonably high.
Yeah.
Unreasonably high. I mean, I enjoyed 3 enough to stop playing and then basically start another playthrough within 24 hours. So,
oh, sure.
I mean, it was still great. So, let's go on to the next one. Viacer, who is Chris Presley, he says, "No, the community has options within the framework set by the developers. Regardless of how they might feel, they have no right to dictate changes to that framework. The creative vision behind that should rest solely with the development team." So he is totally opposed to the community having any sort of involvement at all.
Really quick, I'll just ask this question. What do you think, based on his answer, what this means for super cool adventure game?
Oh. Well.
I think they handle that stuff kind of well.
And I mean, do you think they're still going to make whatever game they set out to make in like...
But I mean, you could buy your way into the forums and early access to what's going on. And I think that's their way of saying like, hey, if we do something obviously crappy, then you can kind of tell us. But otherwise,
we're making creative decisions, like, too bad.
It's not going to be... But the same thing goes for anything. There's the statement, too many chefs in the kitchen... Is existing for a reason. When you put a billion people on something, it makes sense.
I don't
think
the developers are actually sitting there like and actually listening to the words of a lot of these people too. I mean, obviously, if someone makes a suggestion like we did in May that like Edie needs a body, make Edie a robot, and they read it and say, okay, Edie's a robot. That's great. But you know,
the way they did that was really awesome too.
Yeah, I think so.
It was great. She was so good.
Fantastic.
And people, like, all of a sudden, moments like that are forgotten.
Which was one of the hardest relationship things I've ever done was to get Joker with Edie.
Yeah. That was a lot. It was challenging, but very, very cool, you know? And I loved her slow, gradual transformation to almost being, it was like watching Data on Star Trek for 20 seasons, and eventually he's like human at the end, you know? So anyway.
Did you guys stay true to Liara, by the way?
Yeah.
Of course.
Of course.
Yes, of course.
I did like, because I didn't want to have to fight that one again.
Yeah.
I kind of was like, oh God, I hope they don't make me like struggle through making that relationship. I was like, at this point, we should be in. I think we're all
right. It's cool that there was a point very early in the game where she came up and was like, are we still? And you're like, yeah, we're still.
Yeah, and then from
and like,
there
that's
on
it, you're good to go.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Cool. So let's go on to Allegra.
Ah, yes.
She says, I think consumer feedback is important to the process. Devs should know what their gamers like to make an informed decision, but there's a line. Developer can listen without catering, and gamers need to realize they can't always get their way. I know that gamers care a lot and have the right to express themselves. Demanding something is entitlement. I'm sorry. I'd love it if X happened isn't entitled. Expecting it to happen and getting mad if it doesn't is very entitled.
She's got a good point. And she's a very strong advocate for this, you know, no entitlement to the gamer. And I agree. I mean, she... there are a lot of voices out there right now with this ending that sound like whiny babies. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like... And the fact that, you know, all these petitions going on and people are so angry... So like I was talking about with Scott earlier, it's like it's almost like people forgot what a bad game was like.
Yeah.
You know, and like people don't remember 10 years ago when games didn't even really have any fucking narrative.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, prior to like a lot of these BioWare games, the best stories you could find were in JRPGs and they were just a muddled mess.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. I just...
Yeah, like you remember like 20 minutes of dialogue that you can't skip or save in the middle of. And yeah. then, like, if you die yeah. in the battle afterwards, you have to listen to all the dialogue again. Like, yeah.
But is part of this also, do you think, because we talk about this all the time, the difference between BioWare and Blizzard. You know, this idea of the Golden Palace that you're never going to get to go into, and the people who open their doors and always want to hear what you have to say.
Yeah.
Is this backlash for opening your doors and always wanting to hear what you have to say?
In a sense, I think, like,
I don't think people would freak out at Blizzard like this. They'd just be like, oh, well, the ending sucks.
Because Blizzard would just, they wouldn't respond.
Yeah.
And, like, that's the thing. Like, ever since day one, BioWare has been very open about, you know, how the players feel about this game and actually, like, you know, and these, I mean, these are mortal human beings, and I'm not going to lie, their feelings are hurt right
yeah,
now
yeah,
by
yeah.
by this, and they're working very hard to rectify the situation. But a company like Blizzard, I'm sorry, they would just, like you said, lock the door, turn away, make their next game and make $1 billion and not give a fuck.
So, that, so that's interesting, because that brings us to the next comment, which is from Bugsplatter23, Kevin. Kevin says, no, but game companies can't sell the real end to the game as DLC. So now, let's look at a company like Blizzard who's selling one of their games in three parts for
yeah.
potentially $100 a piece, depending on how much of a fan you are.
Yes.
So, like, is that okay?
Oh, you know, no, I think we've
right?
talked about
right?
We've okay. talked about the whole StarCraft thing and how that is basically, you know, first chapter of the story, $50, second chapter, another $50.
And like I said, the DLC, there's, like, unfortunately, right now, there's, like, nothing you can do about it. Like, unless one day, like, everybody, like, it's like when people are like, today, no one's going to buy gas. Like,
yeah.
if everyone's going to stop buying gas for one day, like, good luck trying to arrange
yeah,
that.
But there's two things that, like, annoy me with the internet community at large. And one is this, like, the idea that DLC is evil, for one.
Because
part of me is, like, I get annoyed with it. The day one stuff can bother me sometimes, depending on what it's for and how it's done. I think day one, like, Mass Effect did it, makes total sense. It's like, please buy our game
yeah.
so you can have the full experience.
Yeah.
Don't wait and get it $5 off used. Like, just buy it for the full $5 more than you're going to spend, and now you can play the whole damn thing.
In a way, you could almost view, like, if you buy the argument that making a video game costs, like, a ton of money to
and
do.
It does. It
right.
costs an insane
especially
amount of money.
Especially a game like Mass Effect.
So, if you're on that boat, and you think to yourself, like, instead of thinking of DLC as, like, oh, something I should have gotten in the game to begin with, like, if you think of it instead of, like, as, like, Kickstarter,
yeah.
where it's like, hey, do you like Mass Effect? Yeah. Would you pay, like, an extra $10, like, towards this game to, like, support us and maybe get a little bit extra in the game?
Right.
Okay, sure. Like, that's... Maybe it's not the right way to think about it, but it's another way to think about
it. I think people just get mad at it because they put $60 out, which is a lot of money to a lot
yeah,
of people.
Of course.
And that is like, well, what the fuck am I paying $60 for? And it's like, well, you're paying $60 for, you know, a 50-hour gaming experience. You're paying $5 so that you can play another part that they thought you would find interesting.
I think pretty much to this comment specifically, I might say that we will have to wait and see when
yeah.
the next generation of consoles come out. And, like, if we ever get to that point where all console games are only digital distribution.
And if we see more chapter-based
and
stuff.
And then we'll wait and see if there's more DLC, and then we can kind of, like, reassess
yeah.
this argument.
I mean, the market is shifting, and DLC is the way that EA... I mean, it's also weird because it's, like, it's not like Mass Effect didn't make its fucking money
in day one
of opening sales. Like, Mass Effect made back plus a lot. But for every Mass Effect that does that, there are games that never clear what they got
yeah.
spent on them. And
I think this problem is much more complicated
yeah, yeah.
than what any, like, normal...
Plus, we need to wait and see what the fucking DLC is.
Yeah.
I have a hard time imagining they're going to completely rewrite the ending.
I agree.
They won't.
So, all right. So, next up, we've got StumpyNat, a good friend of the site, says, dialogue is good between developers and community. Community and beyond is the market for the product, ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in agreement with what we're saying, and that's what kind of made me think about, is this the backlash for that?
Yeah.
You know.
Also,
this...
I have something to add to her. I was actually playing multiplayer with her the other day, and she lives in San Francisco, and she told me a story that she was at gym in San Francisco, and someone walked up to her and said, didn't you write some articles for Nerd Appropriate?
What?
Shut up.
Blew my mind. Yes. Totally serious. So
wow.
it's kind of weird. Kind of weird.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well,
it was probably Mark.
It's probably our friend.
Probably our friend that lives in San Francisco.
Well, thank you, Stumpy.
We're worldwide, yeah.
And sure. thanks for playing Mass Effect multiplayer with
yeah.
us, too.
She's good.
And times. Then at FoxyZ replied to Stumpy Nat with a good addition. Yeah.
Yeah, he says, has to be selective which
critiques
are correctable and dismissible. That's true.
Gotta find the balance.
Gotta find the balance.
So, Next up, we've got Cohen, who's going to be part four of the Nerd Appropriate crew at PAX.
Yes.
Joining in with us.
We put him to work.
Says, why would video games be any different than any other medium? Fans don't tell movie directors what to do, or musicians. If they want to listen and take fan suggestions, that's fine, but it should not be expected. It's a vision, not a vote.
Ooh, that's a good quote.
Yeah.
It's a vision, not a vote. That's a really good point. And I think it's interesting because the games industry is still very young, and it's kind of maturing during the era of the internet.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the film industry and the music industry have been around much longer than the internet, so they didn't have that communication with the community that exists now in the games industry. And I don't think there's really open communication with film and music.
I think so. Yeah, I think culturally, you know, because video games are so young, there's a lot of, like, cultural questions left unanswered about video games, like, because they're interactive and because, like, now we're seeing, like, narrative in games and voice actors are becoming popular, and it's, like, it's becoming, like, this thing of its own, and, like, we don't really know, like, exactly what kind of impact this will have on society, like, years from now, so it's, like, we're really on the cutting edge of things here right now, and, like, it's just nice to have something like Mass Effect and to have things that are great video games right now, but, like, in 50 years from now, like, again, we could have our minds blown, something totally different, you know, we'll look back and go, like, oh, I can't believe that we were here at one point, you know?
Yeah.
Awesome.
At Drakmarth says, a community's input is always valid, so long as it is constructive. After all, this is how future content or the next game is improved, and you want them to buy these things. However, that does not give the community control over products, such as a moviegoer has no control over a sequel. Our opinions are heard and taken into account with greater weight than any other media. We are and always will be spectators to the creator's vision. Some accept this, others have their own headcanon.
Good.
Headcanon.
Yes.
I like that.
That's a great term.
That's probably going to be in Jargon Watch in next month's Wired.
Yeah,
headcanon.
It is.
I like that.
I mean, my movie comparison would be George Lucas, who creates Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know,
listens to no input,
and then creates the first three prequels. Everybody does nothing but bitch about them, yet we'll go see them again in 3D. Like,
sure.
You know, it's like, there's this weird feedback loop that I feel like happens where it's like, oh, well, we hate the prequels because we hate the prequels. And you're like,
yeah.
Well. Yeah.
And it's like, well, we hate the ending because we hate the ending. Oh, like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yes, if you ever want to go and see episode one, like, it was the most brilliant piece of political theater you'd ever seen, read the book Darth Plagueis.
Oh, yeah?
Darth Plagueis tells the story of Palpatine's master, Darth Plagueis, which he mentions in the third film briefly. And basically, like, Palpatine's upbringing as, like, a teen up until, like, pretty much through most of the first movie.
Really?
But it really tells the story of what they are doing, like, corporately and politically to put all of the pieces in place for things that happen in all of the movies.
And that's what's amazing about Star Wars, though, is that there's so many other players now that add to that canon.
Yeah.
Like, this thing just
not to derail this conversation, but you mentioned Star Wars. But Darth Plagueis has literally, like, hardly any action in it and is all...
All political?
Yeah, like, background handshakes.
Didn't he teach himself not to die? That was, like, his...
No, that's... Yeah.
That was, like, his... He mastered the Force to become...
Yeah, you learn about all... But anyways, it's good times.
So I shall let you finish up with Dr. Gar.
All right. MD Gar says, absolutely, if a developer serves his community, both parties win due to more games DLC being purchased with that focus on what the community would like to see. More loyal fans and more word of mouth, a win-win in my opinion. Agree with Cohen to a degree, but unlike movies and books, games can be adjusted last minute or patched even later. That's true. They can be patched. I don't know. I mean... I'm sort of on the fence about this one. I think it's awesome. Like, I remember, you know, the years leading up to Mass Effect 3 being released, and I remember having dialogue with some of the developers and talking about, you know, different weapons and what we'd like to see and, you know, how multiplayer should be handled and things like that. And having that dialogue was awesome. And I think most of it actually probably benefited the game. A lot of, Mass Effect has a really intelligent fan base for the most part, I would say. But again, they get paid a lot for what they do. They are the masters of their job. And so I don't think that the community should really have all that big of a say in it.
But I think that to what you just said makes total sense because the things that you're talking about are improving gameplay, improving, you know, game atmosphere, things like that. I think a fan base should have some say. I mean, if you play Mass Effect 2 and you're like, God, those guns felt fake and shitty. And then you go like, man, if you fix that, combat would be almost flawless in Mass Effect 3. And then they fix it and you're like, oh, wow, that does really improve the game's combat system, you know, and a lot of other things, movement and stuff. But that is part of that feedback from the community. But then again, like, I don't necessarily want, you know, at Murderific 423 deciding what my ending is going to be for the game. Yeah. Creative content and gameplay or you know, I don't know what the right technical content are two different things to me. And I think the creative should be left up to the team that has made it so far amazing.
I mean, like, even though, like, you know, with a game like Mass Effect, like, we keep talking about how, like, it's your story, but, like, you know, it's still their story.
Yeah, of
because
course.
Because any set of circumstances that you pull together in the game still need to be written and programmed, and dialogue has to be spoken into a microphone for all these endings. It's not like you're creating new endings within the game that weren't in the code to begin with. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, all of this stuff has to exist somewhere, whether you chose it or not. So,
Agreed. Yeah. But I think it's just less of a pointed narrative than a Rockstar game where you are point A to point Z.
This one
seems like you can go point A to point Z and then back to point B, and like you kind of have control somewhat over what.
But I mean, like, I keep thinking back to when we did talk about that ending to Red Dead, and how we were like, oh man, I can't believe that happened at the end. Like, should it have happened? Like, that, you know, it's kind of dumb. Should you play as that kid afterwards?
Yeah.
Like, that kind of thing. And I don't remember, like, that kind of a backlash, and it's just kind of weird.
Although I will say also that there wasn't. Everybody thought it was amazing.
Yeah.
Red Dead got that's the most amazing thing that could ever happen. And it was like, really? I felt gypped. I was like one of the few that felt gypped by that ending.
But I mean, like, how does that, how does that impact your relationship with Red Dead going forward? You know what I mean? Like, are you not going to buy?
I mean, if Red Dead 2 comes out, I'll play Red Dead 2. I mean, but But the way my argument with it was that not that the ending was shitty, just that it would have had more power as a beginning to Red Dead 2 for me.
Right.
Personally, like Mass Effect 1 to 2, like when you start to
2 started dying, the way that
like
2 started with the end that could have been the end to 1.
Yeah, and it wasn't. Like, that could have been the ending, and it wasn't, and instead they shifted it to the beginning of 2. And it's like this, like, shocking, like, what the fuck did I just go through in the first 5 minutes of the game?
Let me ask this question a different way. Is there anything that we can compare this to? Because I feel like there's not a precedent for this.
There isn't.
I don't think there is.
There is.
I don't think any trilogy that I've ever really watched has had this much controversy. But the thing that, like Micah said, it has the capacity to get rectified, because unlike a series like Lost, which a lot of people were upset about, they can't make another episode at the end. It's like, just kidding. Not that they're going to do that with Mass Effect, but, there are a lot of things that they can do that, with the end of Mass Effect that doesn't retcon, it doesn't change the ending, but just offers more explanation, which I think is what we're going to see.
As a side note, did anybody else see that Damon Lindelof tweeted, contrary to popular belief, I have nothing to do with the ending of Mass Effect?
I did see that.
See, it's clever. See, so he knows. I guess that's the problem.
Well, he, on his Twitter account, he says he gets, like, hazed every single day for it, so he's kind of over it at this point.
I don't think there is a precedent. I don't like this idea of fixing the ending. It's like,
I would be
why
so
can't we just
sad.
Be okay with it? And like,
it would be so sad to replay this game like a month from now and get to the part where Harbinger beams you down and all of a sudden something completely different happens.
Yeah.
That would be really depressing.
Like, you like force push the beam back into Harbinger and kill him and then run straight into the collector.
Oh, can AC/DC be playing in the background?
Because then I would like...
I need a flag!
That would almost make me want the ending back that I have now, and I'm okay with the ending.
They're not going to erase
the ending. I know, but I'm just saying...
Yeah.
Like,
I think it would be an unfortunate effect of the community voice. I think part of it is that this year, and we've talked about this on the podcast, this year the internet has had a very loud voice in a lot of forums, like,
right?
Whether it's law or Netflix, you know,
yeah,
business, like, we've had a loud voice by just grouping up and saying, like, hey, we're not okay with this. And I'm totally fine with everybody saying, hey, they're not okay with this. It's just, to me, part of me feels like, okay, well, the difference between those and the other one is that Netflix, you literally left, or some people left, And Netflix made the decision, like, okay, we're not okay with this. We want to fix it. And the law was pretty evil. This is a game. It's literally something that somebody created for us to enjoy.
Yeah.
And you're unhappy with the ending. If they decide not to ever fix it,
I think the only thing that you can do, if you if you're really concerned about like what happens in these games, is that you can one
stop buying EA games.
You can just not. You can vote with your money.
Yeah.
And then two, like all you can do is write a constructive like letter, like a constructive dialogue to the developer. And then that's it.
Yeah.
They don't have to take it into account. They could take it into account. Right. They could write you back. They could not write you back.
Yeah.
And they're like, that's really it. Because that's how things are with movies.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to say. The difference with Netflix is if everybody just got together and started whining about it, Netflix would have been like, great. You're still paying $22 a month to us right now. We don't really care.
Yeah.
But what happened was they saw a flood of people leave their DVD sector.
Sure.
And they scrambled to try to stop that from happening.
Yeah.
And here it's like, I don't think EA is going to, I really don't think people are going to speak with their dollars here. I think they're just getting loud.
I mean, but like in a similar, I don't know if it's similar, but in another way, like being a Star Wars fan, I begrudgingly pay money for things, right. Star Wars things. And I'm like, ah, I can't believe I'm paying another $60 for this.
Just bought the trilogy again.
And so like, I don't know. I mean, did people,
Yeah.
I think it's good that there is a voice. I think it's good if people really are mad about the ending, then they should speak up and they should say things. Obviously, they need to be constructive. Obviously, they need to not be assholes to the writers.
Oh, absolutely.
That is like the minimum bar needs to be don't be a dick, you know, like.
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, at the same time, part of me feels like, God, this feels really whiny to me for some reason. And maybe it's because I was okay with the ending, but I don't know.
Or I guess in this particular instance, maybe just be happy you have a dialogue, you know, because this could be a Blizzard where you have no dialogue with the.
Or hey, maybe just be happy that there's a game that you can get so pissed off about because it is so phenomenally good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, we are, admittedly, we are fanboys, and people have called us out and be like, oh, you guys are, you know, you're always in their corner. But yeah, we are, because they make some fucking good games.
Yeah. But at the same time, I don't buy everything BioWare does.
Yeah.
You know, I don't play the Dragon Age games and stuff like that.
Which you should.
Eventually,
yeah.
But it's just like, they make good shit. Of course I get behind them, you know?
Yeah.
In the same sense that I get behind a lot of other things that do good
that you
things.
Like.
Yeah.
just, how it works. Just like the things you like and don't like the things you don't like.
But also, as a site, I think we've talked about, like, we don't review shit that we generally hate.
Yes.
Like, if something's just bad and we played it, we're like, God, that was god-awful.
Yeah.
We rarely talk about it because it's like, I don't need to shit talk.
We don't need to put that out there.
We don't
there.
Need to add to that.
There's
that.
Enough of that going out there.
We are a positive beam of sunshine.
We are a positive beam of sunshine.
Well, I don't know. I think we just
skipping
like to
through the bed of
focus
cozies.
On the stuff we enjoy.
No, it's true. There's too much negativity on the internet, and that's why we typically don't talk about it.
Yeah.
So that was a lot of talking.
We just
did a lot of talking there.
Yeah. We did, but it was good. So I think that's going to wrap things up.
Yeah,
unless
indeed.
You guys. That was episode 53 of the Rated NA podcast. Big thanks to everyone that contributed this week, sent stuff into us. We are very, very, very thankful. If you are heading to PAX East, we will be there, and that is on April, I believe, 5th through the 7th.
Yes.
So we'll be there. Definitely come say hi to us. Shoot us a tweet at NerdAppropriate, and we'll gladly come hang out with you and slowly feed you Mrs. Fields cookies into your mouths seductively.
Yes.
Yes, that's going to happen. So please do that. You can find us.
Ash just confirmed his own thought.
Yeah,
I do that.
He's like, feel it. Yes, that's going to happen. Yeah. I just said it.
Did we already promise cookies and pizza to people?
It's going
to
be an expensive weekend. But you know what?
Oh,
I'm ready for it.
Well, thank you for your support.
Yes.
Everyone that listens.
Yes.
And reads.
We're big fans of you.
So thanks, everybody. Follow us at NerdAppropriate on Twitter, / NerdAppropriate on Facebook. Go to iTunes, rate our podcasts, give us 5 stars, because if you don't, we don't get paid.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then you can email any of us at Matt, Scott, or Ash. I just forgot Scott's name.
Yeah.
At NerdAppropriate.com. We say it every time, but we still have some really awesome stuff coming up, and we're getting excited about talking about it soon.
Yes.
Come see us at PAX.
Yes. Thank you, guys. We're out.
Bye.
Cut.
Thank you.